Hey, I'm Johanna Wagstaff.
And hi there, I'm Rohith Joseph.
And we're asking for 10 minutes of your day to go through the 10 things that the UN recommends we can all do when it comes to climate change.
Please don't leave.
No.
And also, the things aren't new.
We are just wired to not do them.
We promise you to help you figure out your brains, and you and your people can make better choices to combat climate change.
10 Minutes to Save the Planet is available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Iran will bear the consequences for choosing to escalate the situation.
Israel's military responds as an attack from Iran begins. Dozens of drones launched from within its territory. Retaliation over an airstrike that killed top Iranian commanders. Welcome to Your World Tonight. I'm Stephanie Skenderis. Also on the podcast, chaos and fear in an Australian shopping center. 6 people killed in a mass stabbing attack. A baby left fighting for life. And
misinformation and disinformation is exponentially growing, right? Anyone can make a post and spread it to millions of people.
Approaching social media with skepticism and scrutiny. The new programs teaching teens to navigate online spaces. Dozens of Iranian drones and missiles are expected to enter Israeli airspace in a matter of hours. This marks the first time Iran has launched a full-scale military assault on Israel. Iran-backed Hezbollah says it has also launched rockets targeting the Israeli military. The IDF says dozens of its combat planes are airborne and ready. Sasha Petrasik has the latest.
This is a severe and dangerous escalation.
Military spokesman Daniel Hagari says Israel's defense forces will do everything they can to prevent the attacks from reaching Israeli territory. Iran's Revolutionary Guards say dozens of drones and missiles are on their way to strike specific Israeli targets. It's not clear yet how serious Iran's move is, but Israeli cities are preparing. Schools and public events have been canceled, and Israelis are being told to prepare to shelter in the event drones make it through the country's sophisticated defenses. Hagari says Israel will respond.
Iran will bear the consequences for choosing to escalate the situation.
U.S. President Joe Biden is meeting with national security advisors. He's already pledged American backing for Israel's defense.
We will support Israel. We will help defend Israel. And Iran will not succeed.
It's unclear what form that support will take. Tehran launched the barrage of drones after its consulate in Syria was the target of an airstrike last week, reportedly launched by Israel to kill top Iranian military commanders. Experts like Suzanne Maloney from the Brookings Institute say the next few hours could mark a turning point in the conflict.
If Iran and Israel escalate to an extent that we have a direct conflict between the two, the United States will inevitably be pulled in.
These attacks come as tension in the region is already high, not only in Gaza, but in the occupied West Bank. Violence flared as armed Israeli settlers stormed Palestinian villages, triggered by the disappearance of a 14-year-old Israeli while tending sheep on Friday. He was later found dead by Israeli security forces. For hours, settlers burned houses, cars, and barns, setting off fireballs and fighting with Palestinians. The Israeli military did not intervene. Farmers ran for their lives, says a villager. They went after my neighbor, beating him until his skull was fractured, he says. Then they stole his sheep. Another Palestinian man was killed, his body carried through the streets during a funeral today in the northern West Bank. It's unclear whether he was shot by Israeli soldiers or settlers. Mourners are calling for retribution here, but for the moment, Israel has a much bigger threat on the horizon. Sasha Petrasik, CBC News, Washington.
Now, according to news service Reuters, the U.S. military has shot down some of Iran's drones headed towards Israel, it's citing two unnamed U.S. officials. And in a post on X, Iran's mission to the U.N. says the United States must, quote, stay away, saying this is a conflict between Iran and Israel. We'll bring in now freelance reporter Rebecca Collard, who spent years covering the Middle East, for her analysis of this breaking news. Rebecca, we know Israel has extensive air defense systems. So how prepared is Israel for this sort of attack, and how destructive could it be?
Yeah, Stephanie, I think that's a great question. As you said, Israel has very advanced air defense systems because, of course, they have been attacked by from Gaza and from neighboring countries so often over the last few years. And so, you know, it has multiple layers of air defense systems that can shoot down rockets, missiles, drones, all kinds of things. And the other thing I would say is that, of course, we have kind of known that this attack is coming for several days, for 10 days. There has been warnings both from the U.S. and from Israel and even from other foreign states like Canada sending out warnings to their citizens that are in Israel and neighboring countries saying, you know, we're expecting some sort of attack. So Israel has also had the benefit of knowing that some sort of attack was coming. We saw them clothing schools, taking other preparations also for this. The Israeli army spokesperson, was on TV just this evening as we heard the news about these drones coming, instructing Israelis that if they hear sirens, that they should go to shelters right away, telling people to stay calm, telling people not to spread disinformation. So from, you know, that standpoint, Israel, of course, has a very strong air defense system, and they also have, a very strong military. We know that there are planes, Israeli military planes in the air preparing to shoot down these drones. So from that perspective, they're quite prepared.
How significant is it, do you think, that Iran is launching these drones from its own territory, claiming full responsibility for this, and not using its proxies in the region?
Yeah, I would say, Stephanie, that is the most significant aspect of this attack. And because, of course, this is retaliation for an attack which Israel did not claim, but was most likely carried out by Israel on an Iranian consulate in Damascus just more than 10 days ago now. And what is really different this time is that they are attacking from their own territory. So since October, we have seen, of course, almost daily exchanges of fire between Hezbollah, which is a militant group that is allied, of course, with Iran across the border between Israel and southern Lebanon. We, of course, have seen the Houthi rebels, who are also allied with Iran, carrying out attacks on Red Sea shipping and also trying to send drones and other projectiles towards Israel. And, of course, there has also been numerous attacks on U.S. targets, both in Syria and Iraq. But what is very different this time is that Iran is doing this from its own territory. And when, back to your question about how destructive this could be, the capability of Hezbollah to be destructive by sending rockets or missiles directly over the border towards Israel is much higher than the sort of drones that we're now seeing, or we now believe are in the air towards Israel. So I think the most important thing about this attack is really that it is a symbolic attack from Iran saying we are retaliating against Israel and we are going to strike Israel directly from our own territory.
Mm-hmm. And where do you think this goes from here in the hours and days ahead? Do you think this leads to further escalation?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of big questions going forward. The first thing is, we're hearing from Iranian officials that there are drones now on their way to Israel. And of course, it's important to mention as well that these drones we're expecting could take several hours to actually reach Israel. So whether or not these drones are the substance of the attack, or whether these drones are just the start of a wave of a multi-pronged attack, is going to be really important to how this plays out over the next days and over the next weeks. And we have heard some indications from Iranian officials that this will be a multi-pronged attack, that there will be missiles involved in this as well, because, of course, these drones that are being sent are not the most destructive of Iran's military hardware. The way that the U.S. responds is really also going to have a major role in whether or not this remains a conflict between Israel and Iran, or whether this really takes on a regional dimension.
Okay, thanks so much, Rebecca.
You're welcome.
Rebecca Collard in Berlin. Police in Sydney, Australia are investigating after a stabbing rampage at a shopping centre left six people plus the attacker dead. One of the dead is a mother who was trying to protect her nine-month-old baby. The baby was taken to hospital, one of eight people who were injured. Witnesses report seeing a man with a large knife slashing people at random. Philip Lee Shannock has the latest.
Witnesses describe the chaos inside Westfield Center. The mall not far from Bondi Beach in Sydney was packed with weekend shoppers.
What do you want for a bag?
This woman says she saw a man armed with a knife randomly slashing at people.
I saw a woman lying on the floor. Like, who does that to people?
Police say the attack began mid-afternoon. Video from eyewitnesses show a man in a green and black T-shirt calmly approaching shoppers and attacking them. Another shows a bystander confronting the man on an escalator. Vernon Michaels says he watched from inside a store.
So we saw the guy come up the escalators with a big black knife in his hand. And just really calmly, he was just walking like he was having an ice cream in the park, you know.
Videos also show a woman police officer running to the scene up a ramp to an upper floor in the mall. Jason Dixon says he followed her.
There he was. He just came in and just started floating towards us. And all I heard was, put it down. And then she shot him. She didn't shoot him. He would have kept going. He was on the rampage. He was on the bloody rampage. And then she walked over and was giving him CPR. So, and it had a nice big blade on him. So she chucked the knife away and, yeah.
Police say the senior officer happened to be at the mall. The man was pronounced dead at the scene.
She is certainly a hero.
Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says there are no other outstanding suspects.
It would appear that this person has acted alone. The motives are not known yet. And speculation on that would not be helpful.
The identities of the victims have not been released, but family and friends of Ash Good say the 38-year-old and her 9-month-old baby daughter were attacked. Ash died in hospital, but her baby survived and is being treated for stab wounds. Philip Lee-Shannock, CBC News, Toronto.
In Myanmar, rebels have attacked junta forces with drones at a bridge near the border with Thailand. Those forces had retreated to the bridge after losing control of a nearby military base earlier this week. The border town is a major trade route between the two countries and provides a key source of revenue for Myanmar's cash-strapped military. The ongoing civil war has led to thousands of people crossing into Thailand. Thailand's foreign minister says the country is prepared to welcome 100,000 refugees.
We also have shelters prepared for an influx of Myanmar nationals fleeing the war and taking refuge in Thailand. There are 123 places near the border ready to take people in.
He added, any fighters trying to flee into Thailand will only be allowed to cross if they disarm and enter as civilians. Still ahead on the podcast, the Women's World Hockey Championship is underway, and Team Canada is vying for a rematch against Team USA. We've got all the action from New York coming up on Your World Tonight. Millions of Canadians use TikTok every day, most of them teens and young adults. And they're not just sharing memes, they're talking about news and world events. To help those users sort truth from falsehoods, a group of Canadian teens has been recruited as fact checkers. Deanna Sumanak-Johnson reports.
One time I heard news about a Drake concert happening.
He writes for his school newspaper, but even Samir Ferdusi once fell for a social media post about his favorite rapper that was just too good to be true.
So immediately I sent my friend the TikTok post about it, and it turned out to be fake.
But with new fact-checking skills he learned while attending a workshop run by the media literacy company Media Smarts, that's not likely to happen anymore.
I've grown up through the rise of social media, you know, misinformation and disinformation is exponentially growing, right? So, you know, anyone can make a post and spread it to millions of people, and that being fake news, right? And they can do it faster than ever. So, you know, I've kind of observed this, you know, that kind of sparked my interest for chasing the truth.
Samir is one of a few Canadian teenagers chosen to join an elite international squad of teens making TikTok videos to teach other teens about misinformation and disinformation online. They tackle everything from a video of a cat that makes an interviewer laugh hysterically.
This is not legit. It looks like people are just inserting their own cats into this template to get a laugh.
To more damaging untruths, like the myth that dead and wounded Palestinians in Gaza are crisis actors.
These conspiracy theories are entirely false, but that hasn't stopped them from spreading. These sorts of claims have spread about other tragedies as well, including the bombing of the Boston Marathon, the shooting of U.S. Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, and the wars in Ukraine and Syria.
Media Smart's executive director Catherine Hill says there's particular power that comes from teens reaching other teens.
They're speaking the same language. They're, you know, tend to be consuming the same kinds of media and on the same platforms. And so there's a credibility factor that's really important.
But learning that what's on their screen is not always truthful can be a bitter pill for some students to swallow, says Laura McCarran. The New Brunswick High School teacher uses videos from the education group Civics to help students learn to separate fact from fiction.
I don't see that moment of glowing happiness when they learn this. It's definitely more a source of frustration. But what I do appreciate and love with the students when we talk about this is that afterwards, that they're heavily engaged in conversation about what is reliable and what is not.
One of her students, 16-year-old Declan DeWolf, can now spot some telltale signs that an online post might be suspect.
Just something that would be kind of hard to verify and is really easy to get excited about. That's usually the formula. It's something that's almost plausible.
It's a conversation Samir Ferdousi hopes to contribute to as he hatches plans for his TikTok posts, becoming an influencer who can influence other teens to think critically about what they're consuming. Deanna Sumanak-Johnson, CBC News, Toronto.
Croatians will elect a new government next Wednesday, and the country's president has shaken up the campaign. Zoran Milanovic is running to unseat the prime minister in defiance of a constitutional court ban, a move that has outraged the current PM, Andrej Plenković, and his governing HDZ party. Freelance reporter Guy Delaunay has more.
I think we're on the right track, and this is what we are going to explain to our citizens.
Andrej Plenković stands by his government's record, but he's worried that message is being swamped by the wild card in the election race, President Zoran Milanovic. The head of state is campaigning for the centre-left Social Democrats despite a court ban.
It's an anti-constitutional behaviour.
Is it damaging for Croatia to have this sort of competition between the president and the prime minister?
Well, it's bizarre, but I'm trying to sort of minimize the negative effects of this unconstitutional acts that were committed by the president.
Croatia's parliamentary elections tend to be predictable. The ruling HDZ has broad support and wins most of the time. But Zoran Milanovic has become the country's most popular politician since he became president 4 years ago. So announcing that he'd be the Social Democrats' candidate for prime minister meant all bets were off.
The elections were kind of already decided before that move. So it was obvious that the ruling party, HDZ, would be in position to make another new coalition quite easily.
Krešimir Macan is a political analyst and consultant.
People don't support him as a president. But what they approve him is the way he talks.
And the way Zoran Milanovic talks tends to be blunt and to the point. A good example is his reaction to the Constitutional Court's ruling that he can't be part of the parliamentary campaign unless he steps down as president. Milanovic accuses the judges of doing the government's bidding.
That gangster clique has taken the court hostage. Such peasants are also illiterate. Therefore, it's a problem because the decision is illiterate.
Rieke pravde!
The court ruling hasn't dampened the opposition's enthusiasm. Their poll numbers are up, with messages about corruption and the high cost of living hitting home. But there's still the concern of how a Milanovic-led government would behave. His populist outbursts insult not just the government, but people in neighbouring Bosnia. He's also praised Russia and spoken out against military aid to Ukraine.
Reaching out towards the right is actually tactics.
Sandra Benčić is the leading candidate of the green-left Možemo party.
He's taking the issue of security and army. He's taking the issue of Croatia and Bosnia-Herzegovina. He's taking all these, you know, I'm saying really mythical places that creates HDZ strategy in Croatia.
So the candidate who isn't a candidate remains the one to watch. And as president, Zoran Milanovic will also have a major role to play in the formation of Croatia's next government. Whichever way you look at it, in this election, he's very much taking centre stage. Guy Delaunay for CBC News, Zagreb.
Team Canada is looking for a rematch against Team USA in the Women's World Hockey Championship. The Americans have advanced to the final after defeating Finland this afternoon, but the Canadians still have one more challenger in the way, Team Czechia. Freelance sports reporter Ed Kleinman is at the tournament in Utica, New York. So, Ed, before we talk about tomorrow's final, let's talk about tonight's matchup. How's Canada looking against Czechia?
Well, there's no doubt about Canada being a big favorite going into this game. They've actually never lost to Czechia in this tournament's history, and they played in the preliminary round at this event, and Canada won quite comfortably at 5-0. But I would say that Czechia is a team on the rise. They're coached by Canadian legend Carla McLeod, and they've been getting better and better. Some really young talent. They were bronze medalists last year, and I think we haven't seen their best. And I think Canada will see their best this time. So while I expect Canada to win, I don't think it's necessarily going to be super easy. So it should be a pretty entertaining game. The Czechs are going to give it everything they've got, and Canada's going to be ready. And at the end of the day, sure, I expect Canada to get through, but to be tested.
This is also the first Women's World Championship since the launch of the PWHL, the Professional Women's Hockey League, earlier this year. How has that changed the dynamic?
Oh, it makes all the difference in the world. I think I'd answer that in two ways, on the ice and off the ice. If I start with off the ice, I remember at the last few of these events where the players are coming out to meet with the media, and all the questions about lack of a professional league, divisions within the women's game, all kinds of issues. And it really put a downer on it. It was kind of like this was the one refuge they had where they could play best on best and try to put all that behind them as best they could. Now here, you talk to the players, everybody's happy who's involved in the new Women's Professional Hockey League. The entire rosters practically of Canada and the U.S. are made up of those players. And they are just here basically to promote the women's game. It's on a total roll right now, and you can just see it. And then on the ice, it makes such a big difference to these players because they don't come in here cold, having not played for a long time best-on-best hockey. They come in here having had great competition in their professional league. So it takes the level of the game, and it takes it to a much higher level. So it's faster. And it's much more physical. It really is taking the international game to a whole new place. So everything about this event is different now because of women's professional hockey taking off.
Now, if the Canadians win tonight, they'll face the U.S. women for the fourth year in a row. The Americans won the last time around. How do things look this year?
That's interesting, Stephanie. It's not just the fourth year in a row. It's actually every single year the tournament's been held since 1990, except one time when Canada was upset by Finland in the semifinals. So these two teams, they always meet in the final, and they always deliver. It's one of the great rivalries in sport. Usually you're looking at, you know, a one-goal game, an overtime game. In their preliminary round matchup here, it was scoreless. They had to go into overtime, and the Americans won 1-0. But I think the Canadians are so motivated to get to the final and to beat the United States, because last year when the Americans won, it was in Brampton on Canadian ice. Canada was in control of the game, and the Americans had this amazing third period to really just take the life out of the building. Well, here we are 12 months later, and Canada really wants to do the same thing here, because this event, I have to tell you, in the United States, here in Utica, it has been supported really strongly. The United States has been selling out all their games. This event has set an attendance record for any Women's World Championship that has been played in the United States. So they're expecting nothing but gold, and Canada can really ruin the party. So it could be a pretty exciting gold medal game if Canada can get by Czechia and take on the United States one more time.
Oh, we'll have to see how it goes. Thanks so much, Ed.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Freelance sports reporter Ed Kleinman in Utica, New York.
Taking it slowly. I'm afraid to be lonely.
It's possible you may not have heard of Noah Kahn. It probably means you're not on TikTok. Totally fair. But the 27-year-old from a small Vermont town has been selling out major stadiums in Canada and abroad, including Montreal's Bell Centre tonight, Ottawa's Canadian Tire Centre, and three shows at Toronto's Scotiabank Arena. His rise to fame started with this 2017 song, Hurt Somebody.
Hold me close and I won't leave,
'cause it hurts when you hurt somebody.
His pandemic-era single Stick Season became huge on TikTok last year and picked up a cool 16 million views on YouTube.
And I am terrified of weather 'cause I see you when it rains. Doc told me to travel, but there's COVID on the planes and I...
Socials aside, Khan's also received a nod for Best New Artist at this year's Grammys. He's also open about his struggles with depression and anxiety, donating a portion of ticket sales to his mental health initiative. And at last week's Toronto show, he brought up a special local guest who's also spoken about the importance of mental health.
He's a wonderful person. He's from right here in Toronto. His name is Shawn Mendes. Bring him on up.
Noah Kahan's tour continues until September with stops at Madison Square Gardens, Fenway Park, and the O2. So here's some of his latest single, Forever, on Your World Tonight, this Saturday, April 13th. I'm Stephanie Skenderis. Thanks for listening.
He called the cops 'cause it got too high and you got scared.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.